Salam, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang, our series where we dwell on Bhagwan's written word. Since we started this series more than 21 weeks ago, slowly we have come to chapter 9. So today we begin the ninth session, ninth chapter. And I think every chapter has taken us so long to cover, because every time you take one statement and you could spend 1 hour and you're still not done with it. And that is the reason why, even though we have finished so many weeks, but we have only covered 9 chapters. But I know we would have actually just stayed on one chapter and still be discussing only that message of Bhagavan, because everything is so profound. We move on because we have to move on. Anyway, by Bhagavan's grace, today we have in the studios a very respected, distinguished member of the Sai family, someone who has served in Prashanthi Nilayam since 2004 in honorary capacity. He has served as the head of the Department of Mathematics and Computer Science, Prashanthi Nilayam campus. And before that, he was for 25 years outside India. He was in Australia, he was in Middle East, holding very respectable positions. And once he got the call, the inner call, he didn't want to miss that call. He took that call, and today he's someone who is such a huge inspiration for everyone in Prashanthi Nilayam, for all the students who have passed through the portals of Prashanthi Nilayam campus and been in the Department of Mathematics and Computer Science, or anyone or any department in the university, they would know Professor V. Chandrasekharan. We are very grateful to Bhagwan that we have him with us for this episode, for this divine chapter 9 episode of Prema Vahini. So a warm welcome to you, sir, for this episode of Prema Vahini Satsang.
Om Sri Sai Ram. It's Bhagwan's will. I've been called here. You know, to have satsang, one should have very high ideals and experiences. I am still learning under Bhagwan's lotus feet. And I offer the entire episode to him. I pray to him that he shall deliver the message what he wants to deliver to all the listeners. So thank you, Sai Ram.
Wonderful. So let's get started, sir. We will play now the first clip of chapter 9. So we will listen to what Bhagwan is communicating to us in the first paragraph, the first stanza of chapter 9, and then we'll begin our discussion.
Manavudu palu vidhamulaina ahankaramuto ashantini tanaku taanu abhivruddhi chesukunuchunnadu. Deeniki kaaranamu అస్థిరమైన అధికార వ్యామోహములే. న్యాయంగా యోచించిన ఏ విషయమందు మానవునకు శాశ్వత సంపూర్ణ అధికారము లేదు. ఎందుకన ప్రపంచ అధికారమునకు ఆది అంత్యములున్నను శాశ్వతాధికారికి ఆది అంత్యములే లేవు. శాశ్వతాధికారి సర్వేశ్వరుడే.
The increasing peacelessness in man is because of the multifarious manifestations of his ego. The reason for this is craving for power, which is transient. When you think about it logically, man does not have eternal and complete power over anything. This is so because any worldly power has a beginning and an end, but there is no start and end for the one who is the eternal authority. The only eternal authority is the Lord Almighty.
So here we have Bhagwan referring to two things, ego and power. And Swami very clearly says that the reason for this is craving for power. The reason for all the peacelessness is a craving for power. And Bhagwan then mentions how worldly power has a beginning and an end. So if you can draw upon your life's experience, sir, and share with us how it was when you experienced power, and how it is when you lose power, and in this entire game of being with power and being without power, how does ego play its role, and what this whole process does to us. You are someone who has gone through it. Maybe you can share how one should go through this whole process of power, powerlessness, and how to manage the ego.
Om Sri Sai Ram. See, when my life began, when I was a child, my family has been very poor. Mm-hmm. So we didn't have money. My father was serving an electricity department as a supervisor under certain engineers, and you know, at a very low level.
In India?
In India. And we belonged to Pondicherry State, so he was serving there in the electricity department as a supervisor. Just above a linesman call. And I was brought up without any exposure to the difficulties my parents were facing to bring me up. Mm-hmm. In giving education, etc. Because being the only son, they never wanted me to know about the difficulties of life, because they said, let him at least have a good time. Mm-hmm. So they were going through the trouble, but they were not exposing me. But Swami has his own plans. Because during my fourth year of engineering, my father had a sudden heart attack.
Oh.
He died.
Oh my God.
I had no money. Then I realized that how poor we were. We were on the road. So we were picked up by my uncle, my mother's only brother. We were nurtured by him, but still having no money, no say in anything, really hurts actually. So the only thing at the time I realized that the world will probably give me respect and recognition if I had the money, if I had the power, and I can demonstrate to all my people who think so little of me that I can do it.
If
I had the money and the power, I can demonstrate that I could do it, I could be better than them. This is the first driving force for me to look for jobs, look for positions, change the positions from one company to another company. Always looking for a bigger role, challenging role. I had no fear of taking challenging role because I wanted to be somebody. But coming to Swami, I realized that trying to be nobody is the greatest challenge.
Oh.
Because if you are nobody, your expectations are minimal, your disappointments are minimal, your life is peaceful. And the first paragraph, it talks about peacelessness.
Yes.
In this particular quote of Swami.
Yes.
The peacelessness comes because you are driven towards power. And you enjoy the power thinking it's a nectar which is going to last for long and eternal. No, it's not at all. I had occupied great positions in companies. And for some reason or other, when I am very strict with some of the employees, the union leaders and everything, they will turn against you. And I had put into a lot of difficulties. The management thought that I am unable to manage the righteousness of the you know, people under me. So they started ignoring me and then sidelining, and all those things happened. So you had power for some time, you think that your entire management is backing you up, and all of a sudden, when there's a trouble brewing up in the company, and you find that you are basically do not have that power and support. So you understand the whole game of power and authority is transient. It's absolutely ephemeral. It is not going to last long. And when I look back, many companies, many top CEOs and big companies, they occupied great positions, delivered great things. Where are they now? Do people remember them? No. The only those who have contributed to the spiritual advancement, who have sacrificed their life for millions of others, they are remembered today. Not those who have been power and authority. Kingdoms have come, kingdoms have gone. Who remembers them? Just a note in the history book. This is how I look at it now. I had gone through this, but in the time, but Swami molded our life, my life, my wife's life, in a way to understand that this is impermanent. But the taste of it came to me when I was 37. I was the head of the department for transmission projects in the state of Qatar, in Doha. I was handling $500 million projects with four or five consultants and 10 international contractors, a big team of people under me. I was gloating with that I can do anything, nobody can touch me like that. One day, I had a heart attack.
Oh my God. At 37?
I was age 37 at the time, very young.
Oh my God.
I was admitted in the hospital in the middle of the night, 11:30, I saw the clock. Then I went to sleep. After 2:30, woke up, I saw all the doctors and nurses were standing in front of me. They asked me, how are you feeling? I was wondering, why the hell these people are standing in front of me at 2:30 in the morning and asking me a question, how do I feel? I said, doctor, I'm feeling okay, but the bed sheet is weighing a ton on me. I answered, and they looked at each other, smiled and walked away. And next day morning I was told my heart actually stopped at 12 o'clock. And they have to give me a 300 joules shock to revive my heart. So they wanted to check whether during this absence of oxygen to my brain, whether any major damage has occurred, whether my I'm able to speak properly, whether normal or not. So that's why the question was asked, how are you feeling at 2:30 in the morning? So it was an eye-opener for me. One day I was the kingpin in that department. Next day I'm in the hospital struggling for my life. Okay. Then I had bypass and triple bypass and everything. And then that was a turning point in my life to look at it, saying that the life itself is impermanent. What is the great thing about your position? And so this is why the most of the peacelessness comes, because you are driven by the worldly desires and power and authority, and you think you can exercise, you can control anything, but absolutely you have no control on anything. The only person who has control is the Lord Himself. He is the Almighty. That's what I would say.
No, sir, you were saying that, you grew up wanting to be somebody. Because, you wanted that respect, you wanted that position, you wanted the recognition. But with time, you realize that now it's more challenging to be nobody. But when did that transition happen? Because I think you would have spent considerable time of your life trying to be that somebody. When was that time when you felt, no, I think being somebody is so futile, I have to be a nobody. How did that happen? And when did that happen?
The transition from my desire to be somebody to be under the Swami's lotus feet and be nobody and just become his instrument, and whatever he desires to do with me, he should do. That's how I surrendered myself. Because there are a few things happened in my life. Like, another turning point is that my wife actually collapsed in an auditorium. And she was declared dead.
Oh my God.
And then the ambulance was called, and they were about to pick her body. And she woke up saying, Sai Ram.
It was
in Australia.
Okay.
So at that moment, both of us realized that life is so impermanent. And she was working for IBM as a senior test analyst, having very good name in the department. I was working as a project manager in IBM with 120 people reporting to me directly. And every year we were handling around $27 million just enhancing the software. So that much is the power given to me. So with 120 people, I could sack people, I could recruit people, I had full powers. With all that, suddenly this happened. Then second time we realized that, don't get bogged down with this worldly positions and money, other things. So think of God before it's too late.
Yes.
So that was the turning point. Then we came to Swami to give the letter, and Swami graciously took the letter through somebody. He didn't take the letter from us. It is a big story by itself. Once he has taken the letter, we know that our only place to be until we die, the last breath, should be in Prashanti Nilayam. So we packed our bags. We landed here. Before arriving, I had no contact with Swami, no interaction with Swami, no interaction with the university or anybody in Prashanti Nilayam.
So you had no clue what you're going to be.
At all what I'm going to be. The only desire is to be at his lotus feet. In fact, jokingly, my friends used to say in Australia, hey, God is everywhere, but money is not everywhere. Why don't you be in Australia? You are making good money. You can use that money for service, serving the poor. And Swami is here. Why do you think Swami is only in Prashanti Nilayam? I said, no, I'm not saying Swami is only in Prashanti Nilayam. Swami is everywhere. Otherwise, the call will not come in Australia to me. But only thing is, if I know that the Sai Krishna is playing and walking on earth in Prashanti Nilayam, why should I spend my rest of my life in Australia? I would like to be with him. You know, living with God is something which is not going to happen for everybody. For me, the power, the money became secondary. So for us, the only desire, only yearning is just to be with Swami, longing to be with Swami. And Swami answered our call.
So you just landed in Puttaparthi?
Just landed in Puttaparthi. And many people said, oh, many times Swami has promised the people that he will give our job, wait. And then people have been waiting for many years, waiting for Swami. I said, fine. No, I'm his instrument. If you, what he wants to use, what he uses, it is up to him.
Beautiful.
But as far as I am concerned, I will land in Prashanti Nilayam. I'll wait for his call. In the meantime, I will do some service. You know, maybe buy a four-wheel drive, get some food, go to villages, or teach some children in the school, or maybe pick up some urchins on the road. Do something. Whatever I can. That I can is also wrong. Whatever he wants. I means ego.
Ego.
So whatever we would like to do as per his will, we will do. But Swami was really, really gracious. I landed in 8th of March, 2004. On 20th of April, 2004, I cannot forget the date. Because 2004, if we divide in the middle, 2004, that is 20th of April. So 20th of April, 2004, Swami interviewed me in public, in Whitefield. And he came, stood next to, took all the letters up to the person next to me, and he did not take my letter. He just turned 180 degrees. And I was praying to Swami, Swami, you are so close to me, but you are so far. Please take my letter. So he turned 180 degrees and took the letter. Then as he was leaving, he prompted me from inside, speak to me like that. So I said, Swami, then he turned. I said, Swami, I would like to serve you in the university. He said, where? Prashanti Nilayam. What subject? The full interview went on in front of public. Like subject matter, he nodded, he said. So it is his call. He is the doer. You know, when I did my PhD in Melbourne University, and after landing in Australia, after doing the PhD for four and a half years, and I know, reaching great heights, again, that is another ego. Then suddenly I found that I was working for IBM, where I was not using my research capabilities, and I wondered why I wasted my life, 5 years of my life. But after coming to Swami, and the research, first thing is that the research which was done, he gave me a student to work in the same area where I did my PhD. So he prepares you. He lays the path, he walks you all the way through. If any of us think that we are the doers, sorry guys, I would not accept it. You are under total and his control. You have no authority. He has the full authority.
Wow. Just reminded of one interesting story. There was this beggar who came to this kingdom, and the king was going out on a procession, So this beggar goes and tells the king, I want some alms. And the king says, okay, sure. And even as the king is about to give, the beggar says, but I have a condition. King says, what? You have a condition? He says, yeah, you can give me, but whatever you give, it should fill my bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the king says, okay, I mean, what is there? Just he calls his ministers and, you know, poured some stones, precious stones in them. But very surprisingly, whatever they pour, everything's just disappearing there. And the king is like, his ego is hurt, mm-hmm. that he's not able to fill this
small bowl.
Small beggar's tiny bowl. He's not able to fill. So he says, okay, you know, get more wealth from the kingdom. And so the minister brings more wealth and everything that is poured just disappears. Then the king is like, get more stuff. Then finally he gets his, you know, his most precious jewels. He gets, then finally everything is disappearing. He has no clue. He says, what do I pour here? So he pours, okay, finally it comes to he pouring his kingdom.
Oh.
But still everything disappears. Then finally the king falls at the feet of this beggar and he asks, who are you? What is this bowl? And then the beggar says, nothing, it is very simple. I have made this bowl out of ego.
It can satisfy the ego.
Nothing can satisfy the ego.
like Mahatma Gandhi said, you know, there's enough food for the people in the world, but yes. Not for the greed.
Yeah, for everyone's need, but not for everyone's greed. Greed. So I think that is something I think we all of us experience in life. You know, we think, okay, once we have this money, or once we have this car, once we have this position, once we have this power, then you know it'll be full. But whatever you put, it suddenly disappears. It disappears.
But the revelation that the things that actually drive us crazy is our desires.
Mm.
One desire leads to another. It never fulfilled. But with the Lord, if we surrender, they say, if you are enlightened by Him, all your desires simultaneously fulfilled. That means there is no further desire. You know, we all hear that famous quote, Dharma Artha Kama Moksha.
Yes.
You know, Dharma Artha. That means Artha is wealth should be earned through righteousness.
Yes.
Kama Moksha. The only desire you should have for Moksha. Even that desire for Moksha to be given up to attain Moksha. So it's absolutely desirelessness is, you know, important. Mm. But we all have. Even today I am building a big house. You know, I cannot claim that I am a, you know, saint here sitting and talking. But the desire is the one, and the amount of difficulties I face, because I have a desire to build a house, the difficulty I face in constructing a house with all the problems, it is all because of our own multifaceted manifestation of the ego. That's what Swami also says.
Yes.
The peacelessness is because of that only.
Yes.
So I think Swami always says, you know, sealing on desires, it is mainly because to improve your Shanti inside. We need to really follow it, you know.
Yeah. At least thanks to Swami, thanks to His discourses, we are at least aware. And you know, there is, Swami also very beautifully, He told us that, you know, try to take the middle path. I think that was the most beautiful thing about Bhagavan. He never told, you know, you become monks, leave everything and, because He knows that we are in this world, we got to live, we got to, He wanted us to have a good life. He can, you know, have everything that the world offers you. He's created this whole universe, this creation for us. But only thing He said is you have it in limits. So He never said no desires. He said have a ceiling on your desires, that's all.
Correct. So now, if we think that, you know, when I, once I had an opportunity to give a letter to Swami, I told Swami, all that you had given me, my wealth and everything I earned in my life, all given by you. I am not the owner. So I said, Swami, please take everything back.
Oh.
I only need you. Mm. We wrote a letter, myself, my wife wrote a letter and gave it to Swami. Swami read the letter, nodded his head, and then I said, the only thing I need is the direction, you know, to guide me in the spiritual path. Because for that only we have come.
Mm.
We left everything, Swami inspired us to leave everything and come here, not for to have another position occupy and claim that I have created so many papers or so many PhDs or, again, it's going back to the, there's no difference between me being here in Prashant Nilayam and doing same thing in Australia, the very purpose we are here, the purpose is of life is to know the life's purpose. So that's what people say. Yes. Is to attain that, to become nobody.
Yes.
That's what it is. Mm. So that I would conclude that Swami, being with Swami,
yes,
and how simple he is. You know, if you wish, you know, the whole world will be at his feet.
Yes.
He never demanded anything. Only people out of love, they gave everything.
Mm.
You know, that's inspiration.
Yes. You know, so you gave that letter to Swami?
Yeah. He read the letter, took it also. And blessed me. And gave him part of his time.
Wow.
So that is why my family is, I shouldn't declare it in the radio. You know, basically, you know, we don't have children. Everything is Swami. Everything will go back to Swami, to the source from which it has come.
Wow.
So
amazing.
And the ego part is very difficult. It's a Maya. The desires keep on sprouting. And right from childhood, if you look at the way we are brought up, you know, from childhood, the moment we are born, he said, this is your father, this is your mother, okay? The relationship is built. You are so-and-so. Your name is Chandrasekharan. Okay? Your father is so-and-so, like this. So you first start building that this is me, Chandrasekhar. This is my mother, father. So everything starts egocentric. The entire life we build is on egocentric. This is my life. This is my plan. I am here. I am serving Swami. I am a head of the department. You know, I have students. You know, all related to me. You know, the connection, the relations we build all around this ego. But when you do, you know, real meditation and everything, the whole idea is it will try to break your egocentric approach, perception, different. That's why Swami always said, please do not take the path of Kundalini Yoga, because Kundalini Yoga is too fast in changing your perception of the world from egocentric to non-egocentric. It is like in a computer, you pull the wires, rewire them. And during the time of the transition time, the computer will misbehave. You know, it'll erratic. So you will go mad. So people won't understand that you are actually going through a transition from an egocentric viewpoint to a different viewpoint of seeing everything all in one in all. So that's why he said, please don't take that path. The simplest path is to serve. Swami's path is safest path. Love all, serve all. Simple message. But difficult. You know, love all is means I always have some opinion about somebody all the time.
Yeah.
You know, to unconditionally love everyone is the most difficult thing, but simplest statement. Okay. But we need to practice.
Yes.
Swami says in the Vahini that there is no point having bookish knowledge. There are almost 50 years of discourses Swami had given. We can read. How long we are going to have the read and theoretical understanding? When are we going to practice it? So practice makes us perfect. So we have to try. Yes, we may fail. Even now I'm failing. I know where I fail often. And Swami, I asked Swami in the interview, Swami, please tell me, you know, spiritually, I want to progress spiritually. Please tell me, what should I do? Swami looked at me smilingly. Koncham kopam vastundi. Kamish karo. Very simple statement. Very profound.
Reducer anger.
Why you get anger? Because you feel that you are somebody. Someone is not behaving properly with you. Something in the life, you want it this way, it is not happening that way. You are frustrated. So, Swami was indirectly saying, reduce anger. It's not the anger. It is let go. Let the ego go.
Yes.
So, it's a very simple statement he made to me. And I told Swami, yes, I know. I have lost temper many times. You know, for reasons of right or wrong, because some places I thought I am totally right, but said no, there's no need. When I am here in charge, there's no need for you to get angry. You just leave the problem to me.
Yes.
You know, surrender to me. Surrender the problem. You unburden yourself to me. I'll take care. Very simple thing. You know, I've been facing a lot of difficulty in the construction. People are not coming to the site. And then today morning I said, Swami, I am doing everything right. I am ready to pay this guy whatever he has asked. And he is not coming, Swami. Please do something. The moment I unburned it, my problem said, Swami, it's you. I cannot do anything. I'm just, you know, I find it difficult for me. Within 5 minutes, phone call comes from my wife saying that the contractor, the fellow has come to the site to do work. It is a real example of a simple incident.
Yes.
But what it means is that when you unburden
your
problems and the dizzy, and just be for Him only.
Yes.
Swami always says, put God first in your life.
Yes.
Put others next and put yourself last.
Yes.
Then that particular approach will certainly reduce your ego-centric approach.
Yes.
You will become more humble, more, even if the praise or abuse or, it will not affect you. One thing Swami has taught me throughout this is the world around you is all about to disturb your peace. If you want something to happen this way, it will bound to fail and irritate you. If you want your parents and everybody to be perfect and look after you, they will do a little bit opposite of your thinking, it will irritate you. It will shake you up. Question is how well we are equipoised.
Yes.
Irrespective of whatever happens outside, you choose to be happy.
Yes.
That is where you can't be happy all the time, irrespective of whatever happens, unless you let the ego go. Because you know that He is there to take care of you.
Yes.
And everything He takes care of, there's nothing to worry about it. There's no fear, because He is there. If that feeling is there, I think that's a practice one should do. I am practicing. Whenever I get frustrated, many times in a day, only I remind myself that when Swami is there, ask Him to help. Hold your hands. This is how I'm just practicing. But I don't say that I've gone very far. But that is the path I have taken.
Anyway, sir, you are in the right place, because this place is called Puttaparthi, which is also put apart the eye.
Correct. Yeah, it's so beautiful. Swami very nicely put it, actually.
Puttaparthi is put apart the eye. And this is really like a workshop. And everybody who comes here, anybody who comes here, the tinkering starts. And right from your contractor to the HOD to the vice chancellor, everybody is having his run of...
Yeah, everyone playing their role.
Yes.
But it doesn't mean that whatever you want, they will behave that way. Because there are 5 fingers in a hand, all of them different.
Yes.
So it's up. When I had my heart attack, next day morning when the surgeon came, he told me, looked at me, say, you are a personality A. You want everything to be perfect in this world.
Mm-hmm.
Your parents, your mother, your wife. It's not going to be. Okay, you will get disappointment, you'll get stressed. Learn to live in an imperfect world.
Okay. Live perfectly in an imperfect world.
But this is his statement, because he sees the world is not perfect. He wants me to live in an imperfect world. Means don't get stressed up. Things may not go the way you want it. Just let it go. That's what his advice.
Mm.
I took his advice very seriously. But I was reading some other book where, the monk and the disciple type of books are there.
Mm.
So once the disciple is asking, Master, is the person is... God makes everything perfect? Yes. Then why is the humpbacked person in the garden?
Mm.
Why is made him imperfect? That is, the master answers, the humpback, God has created a perfect humpbacked man to play his role.
Oh.
Yes. What you see is imperfect, is not imperfect in the eyes of the Lord.
Yes.
He has perfect. Made the person, a perfect humpbacked man has made, to play his role in this drama, what he's doing.
Mm.
So if you are wearing costumes, he is wearing that costume.
Yes.
He is perfect too. Perfect costume.
Mm.
So that is a different way of looking at things. Everything is perfect. Only thing, we should have the right perception.
Our perceptions of perfect is imperfect.
Yeah. It's very interesting. So I am...
One or two thoughts which come based on ego, ahamkara, Swami is saying, and peacelessness. As you were talking and so beautifully taking us through your life's journey, sometimes you get caught up in ego, and sometimes you get caught up in authority, because you think you have authority over the other person. And if you have about 120 people working under you, if I tell this fellow do this, if I tell that person do that, they have to do it. And so because they do what you say, you feel great about yourself. A slightly different perspective on this whole issue is when Swami says discipline, for example. He says it has to come from the source, not by force. So suppose you are the head of a factory or a head of an office. If you are trying to enforce discipline on your subordinates or your juniors by force, then what happens? That leads to ego.
Correct. I definitely I couldn't agree more. I had two types of management trials I did in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Half of my management career where I worked in a factory, then subsequently as a project manager, where I had the power and authority, I tell people that this is how you should do things.
Mm-hmm.
And sometime when they do, I fly off the handle, big ruckus in the office. Mm-hmm. You know, they are upset, I am upset for many days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things don't go for some time and slowly it cools down. The cooling period is very, very long. But when I joined IBM, I had a completely different approach because at the time I'm already into Swami. I was in the Samiti as a service coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
I used to run around, you know, serving people, poor people in the thing. So I approached the staff, a human being, with love.
Mm-hmm.
I never, because I had 120 of them reporting to me, they were afraid to even see me. When mm-hmm. I go and stand next to them, hey, what are you doing today? How are you? They will be shivering. His hands will be shivering. He can't even type the programming code because he knows the big boss is standing next to him.
Mm-hmm.
But I took an opportunity to handle each one of them with love. I used to go and tell them good morning in their own language. I had people from Vietnam and China, Malaysia. I used to, go and tell them good morning, Italian, buongiorno, you know, salamat pagi, the Malaysian, you know, everybody, you know, I used to go and wish them in their life. I sincerely learned each one of them how to wish them in the morning. I used to call them by name, 120 people, I used to call them by name. I talk to them, find out their problems. When, you know, in Western society, one of the major issues is family issues, emotional issues.
Right.
And many of them, they get married and after that they get separated.
Mm-hmm.
Single mother, single father, children do not know which custody to go. It's a complete turmoil, emotionally, really, really breaking their families apart. People need support because that fellow has to go to court and he cannot focus on the job. So I know that this guy is not able to write anything, even one line of code. I go to them, ask him, come to my room, have a cup of coffee. He said, sir, this is what happened. I have to appear tomorrow in my court. I do not know whether my wife will have the custody of my children. So I said, hey, I have powers to give leave, special leave. I'm giving you 1 week leave. Sir, don't worry about it. Your salary will not be cut. You go home, go to the court, settle everything, come back and work.
Mm.
After a week, he comes back full of smiling, saying the court has given me in my favor and everything is settled. I thank you for all the love, you know, showered on me. And any time after that, if I say, hey, David, I have a problem with the client. Can you just help me? Believe it or not, he works day and night without even asking anything. So the love is the best weapon one can have. Swami says in the Premavahini only.
Mm.
Yes. Love is the best weapon.
Yes.
You can, no matter what the people think about it, if you use love unconditionally, those who deserve, you keep on giving, irrespective of whether they deserve or not, one day they will all turn. In fact, I have seen some of the staff members coming to me saying that I actually tried to get a job in another company. They are paying me 50% more. But I inquired about the manager. The manager is not loving like you. So I have decided to stay in this company, work under you, than going to the other company. So I have seen a transformation of my trial of Swami's way of saying that unconditionally love people, how it affected people. When I left IBM finally in 2004, everybody came. Even one lady was working with me. She had a 4 days old baby. She carried the baby to my validity function. She said, how can I not see you? You have supported us so much. You have changed our lives in IBM.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Where we have seen only the people who cut and this and that only, mm-hmm. professionally. Not a single manager have treated us like this. So I think the lesson is for all of us is we should show our unconditional love no matter where you are, because every one of them deserves it.
Now, the beautiful point is, the same 120 people are working under you, but you don't have ego. You have love.
Only love.
Yes.
See, the power of love supersedes your love for power.
Fantastic. That's what, very, very well said, actually.
Yeah, because there is no ego. You have the power, but there is no ego at all. It's only love.
It's only to, how can I help?
Yes.
That's only, how can I serve?
Yes.
Everyone has certain issues in the family, either in the family or in the office. How can I serve? That's all my focus was. And I was looking for opportunities to serve them instead of dominating on them.
Yes.
So it has really had a different impact.
Yes.
You know, so I did, Swami did allow me to try that exercise.
Wow.
And I found it is wonderful. Even today, 2 years back, I went to Australia to settle my financial things. And those people, someone, Russian lady was there. She is now currently retired from IBM. She saw myself and then on the phone, and she said, oh my God, if you had not helped me, I would not have continued in IBM. They would have sacked me. Okay, I was a programmer. But you pushed me to become a designer. And now today I survived in IBM, and now as a senior manager retired, and now my children are all settled. It's all because of the forethought you had, the love you had for me.
Mm.
You know, knowing very well that I can't speak English very well, you pushed me to do that job because you know what is coming. You helped me out. So look for opportunities to serve. It does not matter whether he's a subordinate or you're a superior. You are here to serve. That's all I would say. That's the only way to destroy your ego. I will tell you a simple episode in Samiti.
Sure.
You know, Australia, we had a water problem. Couple of years, a drought, like, you know, many farmers committing suicide in India.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
Similar things happened in Australia.
Oh.
And in the TV, they used to discuss about, do we have to flush the toilet every time we go?
Oh my God.
Because every time we flush, so much of liter of water is going.
Mm.
Can you not flush once a day? What is wrong if it is brown color? You know, these are all the type of, that much serious discussion. Melbourne city was starving. No water.
Oh my.
And we were planning what to do as a Sai devotee. He said, okay, why not we do an all faith prayer for rain?
Mm-hmm.
So we identified a lake called Lake Eildon, which is about 300 kilometers away from Melbourne. You can see in the Google map, Lake Eildon. So that's the one actually feeds the Melbourne city. We thought, why not we go and put a big camp, call all the faiths, Muslims, you know, Zoroastrians and Buddhists and everybody, and including Aborigines. So we conducted the rain prayer. I was the, you know, spiritual coordinator at the time. I headed this one. And then myself, my wife, actually, on the Hindu ritual yagna for the Varuna Jabam, we were made as the kartas. All over, evenings done. We were all expecting rain to pour. And we all wound up the thing and we were going in the car back. Suddenly the dark clouds started coming, and then just above our head, some rain came and sprinkled on our head. And then I was praying, Swami, you know, if the rain really pours down like this, even other faiths will have faith in you, and I want a really rain to come to prove that praying to Swami is definitely will bring the rain. And nothing happened. We all hurt. You know, I was hurt personally, ego. See, I wanted to demonstrate to the world that praying to Swami is the way to go for rain. Correct? But it did not happen. But so I said, okay, we did our prayer. What else we can do? It is the Lord knows the best. So I let it go. 6 months down the line, the Eildon Community Center, from there, a phone call comes to the Samiti. They said, remember you came for prayer? Yes. Would you please come back and give Thanksgiving prayer?
Mm-hmm.
So Thanksgiving?
Mm-hmm.
You know, after we did the prayer, there was no rain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he said, what are you talking? They said, after you did the prayer, it has been raining in cats and dogs on top of the mountains. From the mountain only, the lake gets fed.
Oh.
And the lake is now 60% full.
Wow.
When we went there to 5%. So now, come and give the Thanksgiving prayer. And I already moved to the Prashantalayam by the time. So, Samiti people went and did the Thanksgiving prayer. What it means is that the Lord knows where to rain. Not to put your ego up, it rains on your head. Correct? You do service with a total attitude of service that you are not serving somebody. You are serving yourself. And as long as that feeling is there, he knows. He knows where to rain. Because he knows it should rain on the mountain so that it can feed the land. Not on it. When you're going in the car after finishing the puja, it comes on the top of your head and showers. Oh my God, we did the prayer. Great. Correct? So I think the ego aspect is to be totally annihilated if you really want to serve somebody. Because I remember we go for Grama Seva, various things, and there are rules made by the committee that you go only one sari in the house and this and that. And then people define what a house is, and then, there are old ladies sleeping outside which not even attach the roof on the top of their head. And then we will say, sorry, she is not living in a house. We cannot give. But many times students have come, say, sir, I feel very pity on that lady. She's poor lady. She's sleeping outside. Can I give one sari? I say, what your heart says? I want to give. Go and give it. The rules made, which are general rules, doesn't matter. If the heart, the feelings are right, you should do it.
Yes.
You know, that's how we should do.
Very beautiful. Very beautiful.
Wow.
Because you are not to put people under the box.
In fact, you know, as you narrated that experience, even that last sentence which Swami says in this paragraph, he says, only God is all powerful. we may do a prayer, we may not do a prayer. But where it has to rain, what it has to do, he knows.
He knows it. You know, if it rained on my head, my ego would have gone up. But he knows, because he is a great ego dasher though. You would have seen in the veranda. You know, I was sitting in the veranda second row behind Ramachandran, Professor Ramachandran. Ramachandran, no? That MBA department, he is no more now. Yes. I was sitting behind him, and Swami used to come, used to see, talk to him, and then used to see me and go. So one day my mother was not well, I went to Chennai. So he came, he said, where is the tall person behind you? Swami asked the Professor Ramachandran. He said, then he was asking everybody, somebody, oh no, that person has gone to Chennai for his mother. Oh, like that. So immediately phone call came, you know, Swami inquired about you. I came running, thinking that Swami is going to give me an interview. And he came, looked at me, walked away. You know, because he knows, you know, when to bless you, when not to bless you. You know, I have seen one day, they said, Swami said, I'll call your professor. So I went and sat in the front row. And Swami, he told the driver to reverse the car, went in the opposite direction. I said, what? You told that you will call me, I am sitting here. You know, we should totally leave it to him. In the year 2008, when myself had an interview, first only interview I had, Swami told that I will call you and your wife on 6th, he said. But 6th March was 2008, was the Shivaratri day. I told Swami, 6th March is Shivaratri. He said, Swami will call both of you on 6th. Then my wife waited, nothing happened. Shivaratri, that day, 6th morning, he did not even come. He came on the afternoon only. Then next month, 6th, then people started telling, no, see, Lord's time is different. He may call in 6 months' time or 6 years' time, 6 lifetime. So you just, you know, then I let it go. You never know when it's going to happen. Believe it or not, brothers, on 6th of November 2010, on my Sashtyapti Purti, when the whole of Puttaparthi was celebrating Diwali in Ilvi Stadium, Swami gave a blessing for me and my wife on the carpet outside Yajur Mandir, and gave my wife sari and I think blessings, everything he gave, because he kept his promise that he will call both of us on 6th. He knew 2 years down the line my Sashtyapti Purti is going to fall on 6th of November, and he knows when to call.
Wow.
So it's only delay, not a denial. And only thing we should understand is that Swami is there wherever you are, and he's listening, because he is the head of the house. He listens to every conversation, and he is unseen guest in every meal. Do not forget that. So keep your ego down, and because you cannot play wag your tail while he is there in your house. So this is what I would say, because I always think of that. Every time I pray to Swami, I look in the picture. I don't think it's a picture. I have had experiences sitting in front of Swami's chair, asking for some technical problems of my PhD students. I said, Swami, we did everything like this. Nothing worked for me. And now, please help me. Then suddenly some voice within will come and say, do this, something like that. And then we go and then do something, and it doesn't work. I come back. And then say, hey, I told you this, idiot, you have done the other way around. Then I have gone and did it, it worked and got papers also.
Wow.
So it's not that Swami, you can, he's left his physical mortal coil. Doesn't mean that he's not there. He's there in every place, every atom, you know. Only thing is we must believe it, intensely believe it. He listens to your woes and unburden yourself, unburden your, you know, reduce your ego, be humble, and he will come to the rescue. This is exactly what I have been facing. After Swami left, suddenly there was a vacuum. And then he said, why we came here? 7 years, of course, we had a wonderful time, but he's not there. What do we do? Do we go back? And, mm-hmm. Or do we continue to be here? You know, all sorts of wavering thoughts come. Because you still feel, you know, you and him are different. Mm-hmm. You are not feeling his presence. But after some time, when you sit in the prayer room and ask, and then knock, the door opens, yes. Then you understand that there is no point in going anywhere. Just be where you are, wherever you are, and he is there. This is that my message, and just be humble, surrender everything, unburden yourself. This is my message, my experience-based message. I would say.
You know. Wonderful. Wow. You know, whenever, it's one thing to know these things and read, but it's another thing when you actually go through life. I think only then it sort of gets cemented in you, in your consciousness. Now, you know, nothing can shake it because you've gone through it. And I think each one of us should do those experiments. You know, just like when you're PhD, something is not happening, you did that experiment. The contract did not come, you did that experiment, you know. The brain did not come, you did that experiment. Yeah.
Experiment with me.
Yeah.
But once you experience me, yes. Then have no doubts.
Yes.
You know, people initially, okay, when you are not into Swami, you don't know about Swami,
yes.
Experiment. Ask him this and that.
Yes.
But moment you start experiencing him,
yes.
Then have no doubts that he is there.
Yes.
You know.
After that, it only becomes a series of experiences.
A series of experiences.
Wonderful.
It's a wonderful time.
Another, very interesting takeaway from what you are narrating is so that beautiful statement of Swami's. He says, I give you what you want so that you may want what I have come to give you.
Correct.
Yes.
So, you know, he gives you what you want because you have a certain ego and you have a certain existence for which you think that something is essential, something is what you need, and you think you know what you need. So he says, chalo, I will give you like what yes. you have been asking. But what I have actually come to give, if you silence yourself and kill your ego, then that I will
give.
It's
not the mere trinkets and chains and the rings. And he has come to give something much more than what we, you know, for those things actually. I have seen a lot of miracles in Australia. So many miracle houses. I've seen chocolates falling on us and lotus flowers falling on top of us from nowhere. I've seen all those miracles. I only message I would say that we get excited about all those things. Mm-hmm. And we come back, oh, I got the chain there, something manifested and this and that. All those things, you know, experiences were like a visiting card.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we must understand that the spirituality is just, that is only just the beginning.
Yes.
But to know who you really are, a long way to go. But unless we commit ourselves.
Yes.
Totally, and then understand our weaknesses, where our weaknesses lie, and work towards eliminating them. It's not going to happen. So we need to really understand that. But ego is, you know, is very, very tough subject, you know, to crack.
Imagine.
It's not easy.
Imagine Swami is giving you an interview. And then you go and tell the other person, oh, you got only 5 interviews. I got 10 interviews.
Yeah.
So, in spite of Swami giving you an interview, all it has done is to add to your ego.
In fact, then you long for 10 interviews and after that, you know, people say 20 interviews.
I just reminded of one story that I read. It was about Valmiki and Hanuman.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, Narada goes and tells Valmiki that Hanuman has written a Ramayana.
Mm-hmm.
And Valmiki says, Hanuman has written this monkey devotee. He also wrote of Ramayana. And he's okay, let us go and see. Mm-hmm. So they go to this grove. it's a banana grove. Mm-hmm. And so they ask Hanuman, can you please show what you have written? So Hanuman brings just seven banana leaves on which he had written the Ramayana. And Valmiki reads that. And after he reads that, he starts crying.
Mm-hmm.
And Hanuman is saying, what happened? I mean, did I commit any mistake? You know, is there anything wrong in what I have written? Why are you crying? He says, no, my God, this is so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
This is so perfect. The grammar, the meter, the language, the vocabulary. My God, this is so good. Okay, but why are you crying?
Mm.
No, who will read my Ramayana?
Oh, wonderful.
If you are Ramayana, even nobody is going to read my Ramayana. Oh, Hanuman says, oh, that is a problem. Don't worry. So he just goes, he takes the seven leaves and he just tears it. He says, really? You could just do this? He said, see, this Ramayana that you have written, it is more important for you to have the Ramayana than for me to have my Ramayana. Because that Ramayana that you have written so that the world remembers you.
Mm.
But I wrote the Ramayana because, you know, I wanted to remember Rama. So it's okay.
Wow.
I remember Rama. There is no problem, you know. I don't need the world to remember me. I have to remember
the
Rama.
The purpose for which I wrote is to...
Yeah. You wrote it for approbation. You wrote it for, you know, recognition. I wrote it just out of emotion, you know, just a feeling.
Devotion.
So it is okay. So I think this is a whole process, and that's why, you know,
it's Swami, a process, you know.
Swami has kept Hanuman right at the top.
Right.
It just to always remind us. We are all work in progress to remove our ego and let our ego go and let God in. Thank you so much, sir. So I know
you.
We can continue this discussion.
Surrender myself and thank Swami for being his instrument today. And without his will, this would not have happened. And if I know in the process of discussion, sometimes I get excited and I may say something, it should not have hurt anybody. If it happens, I really, you know, say, you know, feel for it. Overall, it's actually a reminder to all of us, through this discussion, every one of us gets benefit. And those who listen also get benefit, because it is Swami who is actually giving the message, the right kind of message. So, with this, I really surrender myself at his lotus feet. Thank you, Sairam.
I have nothing more to add. Thank you so much, sir and dear listeners. Thank you so much for being with us through this day. Beautiful Thursday. We had the Vatavriksha anniversary today. And we had in the hostel today Rathayatra by the students. It has been a very, very lovely Thursday. And we have been now having this conversation, topping it up with such a beautiful discussion on the royal road to have the moments, God moments in our lives. We have to give moments of our life to God so that we can experience God moments in our lives. Please do share with us your experiences, your insights, just like you heard sir's moments. I know each one of us on this path is making that effort, and when we share, we learn, we join our hands and we take inspiration from each other to walk on this path so that together we walk towards Him with joy. We celebrate as we march to merge in Him. If you have any queries, comments, please feel free as always to write to listener@radiosai.org. As we draw the curtains on this beautiful Thursday, we offer ourselves at His feet for this beautiful opportunity to share His message and His love. Thank you so much. Sairam.